Welcome to the world of Mark's Money Mind, coming to you from my home studio here in Longmont, Colorado. I'm your host, Mark Troutman. This educational personal finance show combines money lessons, timely topics, personal stories, and community wisdom to help listeners and viewers master their finances to enjoy a stress-free life of financial freedom. I wanted to do this episode because I've been asked frequently how I would organize my financial accounts if I were just starting out or if I were starting from scratch. So I thought this would be an interesting episode, especially at the beginning of the year, because sometimes you look at all of your finances and maybe they're a little in disarray, or maybe you think, how could I organize this better? I know that I have a number of accounts at different financial institutions, whether it be checking accounts, investment accounts, credit cards, things like that. We talked about credit cards in the last episode where I do use travel rewards cards. But today I want to talk about how you could potentially make your finances as streamlined as possible. And when I do these episodes, these are also for my own benefit. And I thought it would be good to just kind of say, if I had a clean slate, how would I organize my finances? And like I said, I've had a few questions from people about how they should do that, whether they're just starting out, or maybe they have moved, or they have decided to try to simplify their life for themselves and potentially their loved ones if they're older and they want to just simplify everything for the next generation, how best to do that. So that's what this episode is going to be about. Hopefully it'll be fairly brief because, again, we are trying to just simplify things. And so I just wanted to talk about how I would do it from scratch. So the first thing is you need to have kind of a main cash management account. I have been using Fidelity's cash management account for a little while now. I want to say it's been at least a year or so. And I really like that account. It's working out really well. There is no minimum balance. You get free checks. You get ATM fee reimbursement. I believe they've just instituted no foreign transaction fees too, because I do have a Schwab account, which I use for ATM withdrawals internationally because they do not charge a foreign transaction fee and they reimburse your ATM. But I believe Fidelity has now matched Schwab's approach to that. I believe that's the case. You'll need to double check me on that. And the nice thing about the cash management account is that it earns interest. So I don't have to worry about or think about as an optimizer having too much money in my checking account that's sitting there earning no interest. So that's something that's very attractive to me. And they give you a default. I think it's a bank interest rate option, but you can change it to a government money market account instead, which is what I've done. It pays a little bit higher interest on your account balances. So having one main account where your cash flows are going to be coming in and going out. So this is the account that if I have any deposits, I don't work currently, so I don't have a paycheck, but if I had a paycheck, it would automatically be deposited into that account. I do actually get Social Security survivor benefits, so that is automatically deposited into that account. And then all of my bills that are set up for auto pay, primarily those credit cards I talked about in the last episode, those are paid automatically from that account. So this is really just kind of the main clearing account, I guess you would say. So that's step one. Then some people ask, well, since it is primarily online, and while there are Fidelity branches, they do not accept cash deposits or they don't do cashier's checks or things like that, even if you were to walk into a Fidelity branch, what do you do in that case? Well, I have a legacy checking account at a very large national institution. I won't name it, but it's one of the majors. And this is actually why I thought it would be kind of interesting to do this episode, because I did get notification from them, and I know their main competitor is doing the same, where the minimum balance required on that account now in order to avoid a $15 monthly fee for that account is $2,000, or you need to make a automatic deposit into that account from like a paycheck, for instance, of $500 monthly. And I don't use that account as my main cash management account, so I don't have any automatic deposits. I'm not too keen on having to keep $2,000 in that account. So then how would I do it if I was, again, starting from scratch? Well, if I wanted to have the ability to go into a branch to do things like get a cashier's check or a bank check or make a cash deposit or a cash withdrawal that I wouldn't do out of an ATM, for example, because maybe I needed coins for something, I don't know, I would, at this point, probably open up a checking account at a local credit union. And I did a little research in my area today to see what is out there. And there are a number of credit unions that do offer free checking accounts with no minimum balances and no required transactions. So I think that's what I would do. I would just open up a checking account at a credit union. I would keep a nominal amount in there, but that would give me the ability to go into a bank in order to get like a cashier's check, which I've had to do on occasion. You can't just walk into any bank and get a cashier's check because they need to know their customer. So you need to have a banking relationship. I also did look at a couple of the major national banks out there to see if you could do that with just a savings account, because usually a savings account doesn't have a minimum balance requirement, or if it does, it's pretty small, maybe like $300 in order to avoid a fee. So maybe that would be a way to have a banking relationship. I know that the bank that I use would allow a cashier's check if all I had was a savings account, but another major bank out there, which most of you would be familiar with, and that is Chase, which is not the bank I use. I use another large institution, which you could probably guess. It's the one that Ramit Sethi hates. But in any event, at Chase, if you have just a savings account, apparently, according to my research, you cannot get a cashier's check. You must have a checking account. And those checking accounts at that bank, same thing, high minimum balance requirement or automatic deposits required in order to avoid the monthly fee. So I think step one would be, like I said, a cash management account. I really like the Fidelity one, and I have no relationship with Fidelity. I'm not compensated in any way. It's just an account that I think is very beneficial, and especially when we get to the next few types of accounts, you'll see why having it there makes a lot of sense. So step one, cash management account. My preference is Fidelity. Step two, a checking account at a local credit union, and no fee, no minimum checking account. Now, they're going to try to potentially, not all, but may try to sell you on other products that the credit union has, such as IRAs or savings accounts. Just ignore that. Just get the checking account and call it done and just say, no, thank you. All I need is a checking account. I'm good. All right. So then the next thing is a savings account. Well, you might say, why don't I just open the savings account at the credit union? Well, the answer is usually, in many cases, the interest rate is not going to be as competitive as you would find at an online savings account. I also like to separate my savings account from my checking accounts. There's a little extra step required to move the money. Even though it's all done online, it just has that little degree of separation so that it is there for those savings goals that I may have identified, things like having an emergency fund, saving for a new car, maybe a down payment on a house. And so the online savings account, and I have a number of them, and again, I need to simplify, but I find it advantageous to have accounts at numerous institutions, primarily so that I can report back on them and tell you how good or maybe not so good they are. So I have a number of online savings accounts. They're all pretty similar when it comes to the rate. So the interest rate is usually pretty competitive among all of the online savings account providers. The one that I personally like is Ally. And again, I have no affiliation. I'm not being paid or anything like that from them. I just use them and I like it. I like their interface. I've had good success with transferring money to and from the account. But what I really like is the ability to divide the account into different savings goals. And I think initially when I got that account, they were one of the only or maybe few that did that. I think more are doing that now. So maybe there are some other options out there. SoFi comes to mind. I think they may be doing bucketing as well. But I've just used Ally. I'm very familiar with the product. I think it's good. It works for my needs. And I can have separate savings buckets within one savings account without having to open multiple savings accounts at that institution. So we've already outlined the main cash management account, a local checking account if you desire, and then an online savings account. Then that brings me to step number 4, and that is credit cards. I do like to have credit cards for a couple of reasons. One is either cash back or rewards, like I talked about in the last episode. But also, I just find it very convenient. I pay them off in full every month, and I talked about that in the last episode. And I view it as kind of like a debit card with just one monthly debit from my linked checking account, in my case, the Fidelity cash management account. And instead of having a debit card with multiple transactions that come out of my checking account, I feel that the credit cards give me a little bit extra protection, even though many big banks today will protect you from a debit card situation, you know, if it was compromised. I just don't like the fact that if my debit card was compromised, it's affecting my main cash management account. So I like to keep that separate. Talking about simplifying financial accounts, at the outset, I would pick 2 credit cards, and I would do so at 2 different institutions because, I don't know, I just kind of like backups. So I would prefer to have 2 different credit cards at 2 different institutions. If I was traveling, if one got compromised, I would have the other one as a backup. And I would probably start off with a basic, no fee credit card. We talked about a few of those in the last episode, but the 4 that kind of came to mind at different institutions are, and this is in alphabetical order, the American Express Everyday Blue Cash card, which gives you, I think, 3% back on online purchases. It's a no-fee card. It gives you, I think, 3% back at gas stations, but it's a cashback card. The other one at Chase would be either the Freedom Unlimited or Freedom Flex card. The unlimited is just 1.5% cash back on all purchases. The flex has these rotating categories where you might get 5% in a specific category and then 1% on everything else. So I would choose one of the other, again, no fee cards. The other one to consider, which I have and I like, is the Citi double cash card. So 2% cash back. It's effectively 1% cash back on your purchases and 1% when you pay the balance off. But since I'm paying it off monthly, effectively, it's a 2% cash back card. And then the last one would be the Discover It card, which I talked about in the last episode as well. And that has rotating categories, 5% in specific categories each quarter, and then 1% for every other purchase. And again, these are all no fee cards, primarily cash back. With the Chase cards, you can use it for gaining reward points or just cash back. So I would probably pick 2 out of that list. And of course, like I mentioned in the last episode, I would set it up to be automatically paid in full every month from that main cash management account. All right, so step 5 would be having a standard taxable brokerage account. And this is where I would go back to Fidelity and open up a brokerage account. You could use it for excess savings, for investment outside of your retirement accounts, for example. At Fidelity, you can open them up with no minimum. There's no minimum balance required. There's no fees. It's fairly easy to just open up and have it and use it as you desire. So that's kind of an easy button. The next one would be retirement accounts. So Roth IRA and or traditional IRAs. Again, same thing. I would use Fidelity. And the reason I'm kind of harping on Fidelity is I really like their interface. Their online interface is very good. My mother, who is in her 80s, has her accounts at Fidelity, and she's able to manage it very easily. And I think that says something, you know, especially for those of us who are getting older, I think it's beneficial to have one place where we can see all of our accounts and manage it in a very easy, simplified manner. So I think, again, opening up a retirement account, Roth IRA, and or traditional IRA at Fidelity, when you log in, you will see all of your Fidelity accounts listed there. And with the Roth IRA, certainly if you're under the income limit for contributing to a Roth IRA, if you are a single tax filer earning less than $153,000 in modified adjusted gross income for 2026, you can make a full contribution to your Roth IRA, and that would be $7,500. Or if you're age 50 and older, you can do an additional $1,100. A traditional IRA, you would need to be under $81,000 to make a tax-deductible contribution, and that's if you're single. For married filing jointly, for the Roth IRA, as long as your modified adjusted gross income is under $242,000, so pretty significant there, you can make a full Roth IRA contribution. And for a traditional IRA, for it to be deductible, if you make less than $129,000, and you're married filing jointly, you can make a tax-deductible contribution. And that assumes you already have a workplace plan. If you don't have a workplace plan, in order to make a deductible contribution to a traditional IRA, there is no income limit. So that is the qualification there. And the one thing you may want to do, again, you could open up both a Roth IRA and traditional IRA, or if you have a 401k or a prior employer, you could roll it into Fidelity and have it there at Fidelity within your login. And that could be if you had a Roth, you could move it over and you would have the Roth IRA at Fidelity, or a traditional 401k becomes a traditional IRA if you roll it into Fidelity, for example. And the one thing you may want to consider if you don't currently have a Roth IRA is opening one up and even making a nominal contribution so you can get what is called the five-year clock started. So there are 2 5-year rules, but I'll just talk about one of them. And that is, if you want to make a distribution from your Roth IRA, the first money that comes out of your contributions, and you can do that anytime with no penalty, no tax, the earnings cannot be distributed from the account without penalty unless you are 59 and a half and the account is 5 years old. So it's good to get that 5-year clock kind of started. So you can do it by making any size contribution to your Roth IRA. So you could open a new one and put in $100 and you get that 5-year clock started, and starts as of January 1st of the year you make the contribution. So no matter when you make it in the year, it starts as if it was contributed on the first of that year. And that gets the 5-year clock started. Now you may ask, well, what do I do if I'm over the income limit? Well, there's a couple things you can do. If you have a traditional IRA, you can always make a conversion to a Roth IRA. Now, you may say, well, I don't want to do a big conversion because there's tax implications. Well, you can make a small conversion of $100 from your traditional IRA if you have one, or a prior 401k that you've rolled into Fidelity, for example, and which is now a traditional IRA. You can make a conversion. Now, if you don't have a traditional IRA and you're over the limit, and let's say you just have a 401k at your employer, or you don't have a 401k at all, and you don't have a traditional IRA, and you're over the income limit, there still is the ability to do this. You could open a traditional IRA, and let's say you're over the income limit and you have a workplace plan, which means that the income limit applies. You could make an after-tax contribution to a traditional IRA, so you wouldn't get the tax deduction, but then you can immediately convert it to a Roth IRA to get that 5-year clock started, even though you wouldn't be able to contribute directly to a Roth IRA. I know it sounds a little complicated, but it's fairly straightforward. And there is something called the pro rata rule, but that wouldn't apply if you didn't already have a traditional IRA. And that's what we're talking about in this case. So retirement accounts, I would open up a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA if you don't already have them. And at the minimum, I would open up that Roth IRA and get that clock started. So now we've got our main cash management account. We potentially have a local checking account at a credit union so we can do some walk-in banking if need be. We have an online savings account where we can have various savings buckets. We've got potentially two credit cards at two different institutions that are no-fee credit cards. Then we have a standard taxable brokerage account back in that same main portal. And I've been mentioning Fidelity as an example. And in that same portal, a Roth IRA or potentially a traditional IRA or maybe both. And then I would say if you have a high deductible health plan that is HSA, so health savings account eligible, and you would know that by looking at the plan, it should say HSA eligible. If it is, you could ask your HR department if you get your healthcare through work or if you're buying it on the marketplace, it would say that it's HSA eligible. And your employer, if you do get it through work, may have you set up at a third-party custodian for your health savings account. If you're not maxing it out through work, you could also have a health savings account at Fidelity, for example, which they have very good health savings accounts. Again, no minimums and no fees. And that's where I have mine. I really like it there. And that's kind of why I've been talking about Fidelity, because they have a lot of different accounts that I think are very attractive when you look at them relative to other custodians out there. So you could have a health savings account in Fidelity if you have the ACA coverage and you don't have an employer plan, for example. You could just fund it directly there. And the amount that you can fund is $4,400 if you have an individual plan, or $8,750 per year if you have a family plan. And if you're 55 or over, you can do an additional $1,000 catch-up. If you're single, it would be in your own account. If it's a family plan, each spousal member could do it, but they have to do it into their own account. And those are 2026 amounts. So that's how that would work. And then the last thing is if you're charitably inclined, I think I've talked about this on an episode a while ago, you could open a donor advised fund. And that's something I've done. I looked into Fidelity. I looked into Vanguard. I know there's others out there, but again, I'm trying to simplify things and have everything in one portal. So I found that the Fidelity Charitable Donor Advised Fund is quite good. And that is where I have chosen to open my donor advised fund. Effectively, what you're doing is you're creating your own little charitable trust, I guess you would say. And you can make contributions to that with cash. You can do it with highly appreciated securities, which is the most tax optimized way to do it. And you can lump those. So you could make contributions to your donor advised fund and take the itemized deduction for large contributions once every so many years, and then go back to the standard deduction for each year thereafter. And then you can give the money from your donor advised fund over time. You can fund it in 1 year and then make charitable contributions from that in multiple years going forward, for example. And that's a good kind of tax efficient way to fund a donor advised fund. So that's what I've chosen to do. And I did it in years where itemizing made a lot of sense because in 1 year, for instance, I sold my house. So I benefited from having itemized deductions, or I did a very large Roth conversion in 1 year. And so itemizing made more sense in that year. And then in other years, it makes more sense to take the standard deduction. So that's what I've done. So let's recap here. So hopefully, I know this sounded maybe a little complicated because there's really kind of eight steps here that I've outlined. So step one, establish a main cash management account. I like the Fidelity cash management account. No minimum balance, free checks, ATM reimbursement, no foreign transaction fees, and earning interest. The second, and this is really a choice, if you want to have the ability to walk into a branch somewhere using a credit union, and they usually have low or no fee checking accounts available, so that would be a good way to establish that relationship. Then open a separate online savings account with bucketing for your goals, things like emergency fund, saving for a new car, down payment on a house, things like that. And I like Ally in that case, having two credit cards at two different institutions. That may be a little overkill to have it at two different institutions, but I do like having that backup, I guess you would say. I definitely like having two cards, one for backup, but I also like the idea of maybe having it at two different institutions. Then having a brokerage account, a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, a health savings account, and potentially a donor advised fund. And all of those could be done at Fidelity in your own online portal and have everything all nice and neat in one location. So that's what I would do to simplify my financial accounts. I haven't done it myself personally. I have accounts at various organizations. And like I said in the last episode, I do kind of benefit from having different credit cards for the rewards for travel, because I do a lot of travel. So that's beneficial. And I'm willing to have that extra complication, I guess you would say, in my financial accounts. And I'm good with that for now. And that may change going forward at some point. And I do have a number of accounts at different brokerage firms, but I like it from the standpoint so that I can really do the research. But if I didn't need to do the research, I think I would just consolidate everything based on my research to Fidelity at this point. I hope this was beneficial to those who are just starting out and are trying to figure out how to streamline their financial accounts from ground zero, or for those of you who have accounts kind of scattered around. And maybe this would be a good project for the year to try to streamline, simplify, and make your own financial life easier, and potentially for loved ones that may need to step in at some point in time to either help you or one day way down the road when someone needs to clean up our mess, I guess you would say. This would be something I think they would be very thankful for. And I probably need to do this myself at some point. So anyway, like I said, I like to use these shows to kind of think about things. And as the name of the show goes, what is currently on my mind? And this has been something I've been thinking about. So hope you enjoyed it. Thank you for listening to this week's show. Please click follow on your favorite podcast player or subscribe on YouTube to ensure you don't miss any future episodes. Also, please leave a rating and review for the show. This helps improve the ranking and enables other like-minded people find the content in their podcast players. I would also appreciate it if you would recommend this show to friends and family that might benefit from this content. See you next time on the Mark's Money Mind Show. Until then, make some, save and invest, live on the rest. Now for the all-important disclaimer. This show is for education and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered investment, tax, or legal advice. Please consult the appropriate advisor or advisors before implementing anything you hear on this show or any other show for that matter. While I fully intend for everything on this show to be true and accurate at the time of each recording, occasionally errors may occur, so please do your own due diligence on anything discussed.